Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, hosted by me, Dr. John Wales. This is the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry experts. Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry experts. Today's expert is the founder of Stewardship, a mortgage brokerage, insurance agency, and investment management firm that was named an Inc. 5000 fastest growing company in America 2 years in a row. He is also the author of the book, The Problem Isn't Their Paycheck. He is a keynote speaker, entrepreneur, loan originator, insurance agent, and investment advisor, and has over 15 years of experience in the industry. He is here today to assist us in how to attract top talent and how to build a thriving company culture. I would like to welcome to the huddle the founder of Stewardship, Grant Bhatma. Welcome to the huddle.
Thanks, John. Excited to be here. It's going to be fun.
Our episodes are always fun. One question that I wanted to ask you is, the insurance industry is generally a refugee type of industry. Nobody grows up in kindergarten trying to play insurance agent. So tell me a little bit about how you got into the insurance business.
Yeah, I saw a need and I wanted to fill it. There was a family member of mine who got in a car accident, and it was an accident, right? It was his fault, didn't do it on purpose, but it was an accident. Come to find out, the insurance coverage that my family member had was nowhere good enough, and it messed him up financially. And that financial ruin then turned into other issues that kind of led into some things that happened in his life. And the travesty was the agent never talked to him about his insurance needs after he got his insurance when he came out of high school. So here he is years later with a home, kids, assets, income, and none of that was properly protected. So I said to myself, well, I'm not going to allow that to happen to any more of my family members. And I started an insurance agency to try to fix it.
That is a very common story. I'll tell you, I started my first insurance agency because I was ripped off by an insurance agent.
Wow.
What I found is once I'd learned what I was doing and how to work and grow an agency, that the industry was very welcoming. I expected a lot of competition and I hear everything cutthroat, but the carrier reps, the 20 groups, the networking groups that I work with, everybody has been very welcoming to me and taught me a lot of lessons.
Oh man, of all the finance industries that I work in, investment management world, the mortgage brokerage world, insurance is by far the most friendly. And I have genuine, like really great friends. Some of my best friends now are people that I have met through the insurance industry. And it's awesome. I mean, I love going to insurance events just because I get to see some of my friends and it's a blast. They are so welcoming and so loving. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful place to work.
I agree. So how did you create your agency? What are some of the steps that you took? I mean, we know the why, but how did you create it? And then how did you expand it by cross-selling into different industries?
So I actually started in the mortgage world as I was a mortgage loan originator, basically as an 18-year-old kid, right when I turned 19. And I was doing home loans through college. And when I was in college is when I kind of saw some of these bad things happening to people that I knew and loved and their finances. And I'm like, man, I want to figure this out. I want to fix this. And when I was in college is where I created the business plan for what I have now. And the plan was all along to create multiple different ways to serve people in their finances, because what I discovered was finances are a big deal. And if finances aren't handled correctly, it can really negatively impact people's life and then the impact they're able to make on other people's lives. However, if finances are handled well, then it can enhance their life and allow people to make a big positive impact on other people's lives. And I wanted to create a place where people could go to make sure that finances were not a thing that was holding them down. So I started with the mortgage brokerage, and then the insurance agency was added after that. And then after that, I added the investment management firm. So the big differentiator that I did with the insurance agency was making sure that we did what we call like a renewal checkup, where every year at renewal, we're looking at the customer's needs, asking them a few questions, seeing how their life has changed so that we can determine if the insurance needs to change with them. And again, that was brought on and motivated because of what happened to my family member. So that is kind of the big thing that we did to start.
I am always surprised when I am asked to review an agent's book of business and I see that they haven't touched a policy for 5 or 6 years. Not only is that coverage probably outdated, but think of all the cross-sell opportunities that that agent is missing by not reaching out to that insured.
Oh, yeah, and I get it. I understand why there's the set-it-and-forget-it mentality, because insurance is always going up. So, like, every time you chat with somebody, you're going to have to deal with that. But I just ask myself, okay, well, what does this make possible, right? Whenever there's something bad, something that we don't like, asking myself that question, what does this make possible? How can I engage in it and change in it? Well, if their insurance is always going up every year, what does that make possible? It makes possible the opportunity for us to not make insurance a commodity, but look and act and feel like an advisor to them, a real genuine advisor who's giving them great advice throughout something that they might be frustrated with, like an increase in price. Well, now I'm making insurance not about price, but asking questions to them to ensure they're getting the proper coverage. And it's a huge value add. But like you said, the cross-selling opportunities, I mean, I would venture to guess that over half of our book is from cross-sell opportunities from renewal, not at the initial purchase. The least expensive acquisition cost you're going to have is a current client. So instead of spending money trying to go get more clients, spend your time, energy, and effort into your current clients, because that's the lowest cost of acquisition. And we all know that independent insurance agencies don't have a crazy amount of margin on personal lines business. So you got to focus on that.
I agreed. You got to focus where you're making the most money, and where you're making your most money is generally in your current book. Maybe it was different for you. I have a finance background as well as an insurance background. And for me, it was always difficult to sell those because they are such an intangible product. The finance was a little bit easier because you're not printing the money. You're helping them to get the immediate gratification and then fill it later. And insurance is almost the exact opposite, where you're paying now for the indemnification later. How do you relate those in your sales approach when you're working with your clients? And then as a follow-up, how do you pick your ideal client?
Yeah, so that is exactly what we have to deal with every day, John. That's an unbelievable question. And I don't think I've ever been asked this on a podcast, so this is going to be good. But we have the mortgage brokerage, so we're helping people get a home loan, and that is a more felt need right away. And people get excited about buying a house. They're doing all the things to buy the house. And to be honest, the process of buying a house isn't as simple or as easy as everybody would like. So they're going through this saying, just give me the dang keys, right? They just want the keys to their home. And buying the homeowner's insurance is not something that they want to go through line by line and making sure that they have all the right coverage and all the right things during that time. So instead of trying to force that, and instead of trying to force cross-sells in the midst of that part of their life, we do anything and everything we can to make that process as simple and as easy as it can be. We do our best to put ourselves in the customer's shoes, knowing that they're buying a house, it stinks, they just want the keys. So let's help them get their keys and make that experience as awesome as possible. Then at the renewal, because we know we're going to be connecting with them, they have a trusted relationship with us because we did help them with the home loan. They already have their keys. They're already settled in. But because we have engineered a customer journey that allows them to learn more about who we are and what we're doing throughout that year, when renewal comes, they're ready for a conversation and have an even deeper sense of trust in us as an advisor, not just some commodity sales of insurance. And they see insurance as a part of their financial plan, not as a part of something that's a monthly bill. That's like our biggest focus, is how can we educate, how can we create an experience for our customers so that at renewal, they don't see their insurance as a monthly bill, they see it as something that's part of their financial plan. And with that focus, it helps turn those conversations from, hey, I just need to get the keys in my hand and they become a customer, to really providing for them a full holistic insurance policy picture for them and their families. Does that answer that first question that you were asked?
It does. And you bring up even another one. You said you engineered a customer journey.
Yes.
I am very impressed with that because most agents don't even realize they have a customer journey, much less that they need to create one and how to engineer towards the results that they want. Can you give us a little bit of insight to that?
Yeah, for sure. I think it was in 2016, I was speaking at an event, and that was all that I talked about. I just talked about customer journey engineering and mapping that out. And the idea that the customer journey is not like it starts and ends like a normal timeline, but the idea that it's an infinity loop and that it keeps going, specifically for insurance, was something that the attendees were like, whoa, what is that? But then more importantly, when you have identified all the stages in the customer journey, you can then decide which points in each stage do we want to add efficiencies, where we add in automation or add in technology? Which points do our customers see as issues or pain points, and we can insert ourselves to make sure that those pain points are removed? But then also, what parts in the customer journey are there moments of highest joy so that we can go ahead and try to bring more joy to that and intentionally create opportunities for them to tell others about the joy they're experiencing? That way we can earn more referrals. And simply put, I like to say that the customer journey typically has three phases. That has the decide phase, where they're trying to figure out if they even want to use you or the product that you or service you have available. That's called the discover phase. So the first phase is discover, where they're trying to figure things out, where they're learning about you, they're learning about the stuff that you have to offer. Then there's the decide phase, where you're selling them on it, they're engaging with you, they're a lot more interested, and they've become a client at the end of the decide phase. And then the last one is the delight phase. So discover, decide, delight. And the delight phase is where you have them now as a client. What are you going to do all the way up till they go back to the discover phase throughout the renewal process, and they're deciding again on what to do during renewal, whether it's not only just stay with you, but change their coverage or change the policies that they may have.
And with that engineered journey, I mean, it makes sense. A lot of us will look at the onboarding flow as we got an app and we booked it. I mean, we think that, okay, how simple is that? We got the app, we booked it. And we're not thinking about the behind the scenes or things from the customer's point of view that made them select us. And most of us, if you were to ask the agents out there, why are your insureds picking you? Out of everybody else on Main Street, why did the insured decide to book with you? I don't think many of us would know.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what's crazy is not only does the engineering of a customer journey, intentionally thinking through what each stage is and how each stage leads to the next, and what macro and micro interactions you want to have with the client, and helping yourself understand why a customer would choose you and why they would stick with you, as you were mentioning, all of that helps when you're doing customer journey engineering. But if I'm honest with you, what's been the most impactful to engineering a customer journey has been how it's helped our team internally. We have a pretty big book of business based on the total number of employees that we have, mostly because we're so dang efficient. When you have a customer journey that's intentional, you can not only find moments of pain and joy for your clients, but moments of pain and joy for your team. And figuring out every year what you can do to kind of turn the dials to make things even better, where to pump up the volume, where to pump the brakes. And it is extremely valuable. And my team loves that.
I always say, you know, running a business is like trying to, you know, steer a boat through a slalom course. It's never a straight run shot. It's never the 100-yard dash. It's always how many hurdles are you going to jump, and what are some of the fine tweaks you need to make in your processes, but also in your staff and in your expectations that you have with your staff in order to keep the machine running right. One of the things that you mentioned in your book is it's not the problem isn't their paycheck, but how do you hire the right people? How do you create the right culture and ecosystem in order to get the performance that you're looking for? And I know that that's a loaded question there.
Yeah, it's a good question, though, and I'm happy to answer it. I have a simple framework, and it's a motivational framework. It's how I believe people are motivated. And understanding this framework and understanding how we as people decide and make decisions helps me create a culture that helps my team make the right decisions, whether that is working hard, whether that is showing up, whether that is cross-selling when I ask them to, or going above and beyond to serve clients, or just being an awesome team member. I believe money is a part of it, but it's not the most important part. I think that is the fourth piece on the motivational framework, but there are three other pieces of motivation that are even more important than that. The third one is freedom. People desire to have freedom and autonomy in their lives. They want to be able to make their own choices, whether that is freedom in their job making them feel almost enslaved or trapped, to freedom in how they work. And we often micromanage people because when we started our agencies, we were doing everything. And we were really good at it. So we had some success. So as a result, we think everybody needs to do things the exact same way we do. And that takes away people's sense of freedom and impacts their motivation, but also impacts the impact that they can have. And then the second most motivational thing is affirmation. Sure, people need some freedom. They need freedom in how they're going to throw the bowling ball down the aisle to hit the pins. But they need some guidance, meaning you got to put up the guardrails to make sure they don't go in the gutter. Nobody wants to go in the gutter. An affirmation is not just telling people when they're doing awesome and when they're doing good, but it's also telling people when they do bad. We can't be scared to tell people right away if they're not doing it correctly. Too often we are waiting to tell somebody they're doing a bad job till their 90-day performance review, and it's like, why didn't you tell me that 90 days ago? Yet the number one thing clicked on the internet, other than, you know, some nefarious things, is the Amazon reviews. So whether we're buying a mortgage, insurance, or a toothbrush, we want to know if we're doing it right, if this is the good purchase, if this is right, or if this is wrong. So as we're leading and motivating our team, we have to provide a sense of freedom, and we have to give affirmation intentionally as we're guiding them through making those free choices. But the most motivational thing out there, and this is a huge part of my company, is you have to have a unified purpose. This goes beyond like your why of why you're doing your business and what you're doing, but you have to communicate that to your team, and you have to make sure that everything points to this, how they're getting paid, how they're being compensated, how they're being affirmed, how they're getting freedom. Everything points to this purpose that you're on in your business, because a fundamental thing about all business is that business does not exist unless somebody somewhere is being impacted with a product or service. Somebody somewhere is being served. So fundamentally, business actually is selfless. The profit and the money piece is just a result of the service. So what type of service are you providing, and how is that making a positive impact on somebody's life? Because people want to do work that matters, but more importantly, they want to come into the office and have work with a purpose that they get to pursue with other people that they like. And some of the people on my team are great friends with one another, and they play golf with each other, and their families hang out with each other, and they go to church with each other, and they just have this deep sense of connection. And that purpose that they're on helps connect them better. And those are the things that I focus on as a manager and a leader in my business: freedom, affirmation, and a unified purpose that attracts people to come work for me, but then also helps me get the most out of my team as they're working.
As you're creating that culture, what are some of the talking points that you use to emphasize and communicate to your team what your company purpose is? Give us an example. Like one of my friends worked at Ace Hardware, and he sells, I'm not selling a hammer, I'm selling a nail that's inside of wood. He's not selling a drill, he's selling the hole that the drill makes. And it took years for his team to finally realize what the heck he was talking about. People don't care about insurance, they care, or mortgage. They care about what the mortgage or the insurance does to them. I know a lot of business owners, we get it. I mean, we are galvanized in fire, and we get it really quick if we're going to stay in business. But how do we communicate that to our team in an effective way in order to unify that sense of purpose that we are part of the solution? And if we're not part of the solution, chances are we're part of the problem, and they're going somewhere else.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you an example right now. John, are you married?
I am.
Okay, what's your wife's name?
My wife's name is Kathy.
Kathy. Does Kathy listen to the podcast?
No, she doesn't. She doesn't like anything
like
to do
with my wife. She doesn't.
Yeah.
She doesn't listen to my podcast. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna ask you to do me a favor. I'm gonna ask that when this podcast episode airs, that you play for her this section that I'm about to say right here. Okay? Because I'm gonna say a message to Kathy. Kathy,
do.
I have been on a lot of podcasts. I have been on a lot of insurance podcasts. But my podcast interview right now with John, it's different. Not only is he prepared, but he's asking really, really good questions. Like I said, I've been on a lot of insurance podcasts, and he's asking me questions I've never been asked before. And as a result, the people who are listening to this podcast are going to get something from me they never heard before, and their lives are probably going to be better because of the way that they're going to be able to serve people better with insurance. This podcast that John is doing, the work that he's doing, is making insurance agents' lives better, and as a result, making people in those insurance agency communities better. Kathy, John's really good at this. I would totally do another one of these interviews with him because it's fun. And I just want you to know that the work he's doing with this podcast isn't some funky recording, but it's really making an impact on real people's lives. And I'm grateful for the support that you give him to make this podcast come to life. So, John, that was an example of something that can be done, that we as managers and leaders should do more often. The truth and the travesty is that Kathy probably has no idea how good you are at what you do. She knows that you're good at your job, and she loves you, and she supports you, and she thinks you're great because she's your wife. But if your wife is like mine and like most, they have no idea how really good we are at what we do and the impact that we're making. So when we have people that are under our charge, that are in on our teams, if we ever come in contact with one of their family members, one of their friends, we should make a beeline right to that person and say thank you for the role that they play in supporting our team member, our employee, to be able to do what they do. And then we should share real, relevant stories. John, I wasn't making anything up that I just said. I was sharing my experience of what it was like being on a podcast with you. We should do the same thing when we're introduced to one of our employees, family members, or children, or friends, and just say, look, this is the real impact that they're making. That right there is affirmation. You're providing an awesome sense of affirmation to letting people know that they're doing it right, but it's also pointing to the purpose that you're on, the purpose that whatever endeavor they're moving forward to is really making an impact on someone's life. And that's a great way to get people on your team to just run through brick walls for you and want to come into the office and do it with even more fervor, energy, and effort.
I think that that's a golden tool right there, because how many times do we get lost in the weeds? We sometimes forget what our true north is because we're kind of trying to walk through the forest and micromanage the bark on the trees. To give make sure our employees have the tools that they need, and to make sure that they have that affirmation they need and that they have the culture they need in order to keep our company on true north. I've seen insurance agencies that I thought would do well and crash and burn because they didn't communicate their culture to the very well to their team, and they became a turn and burn shop, which I think I don't see that business model lasting. I don't think the agencies that are turning and burning, eventually they're going to burn enough bridges and not be around. So
yeah, you know, that was one of the biggest mistakes I made as a business owner was that I had a purpose for why I started the business, but I didn't intentionally communicate that to my team or the people that were working for me. And as a result, when I first started, I failed as a manager and a leader. I wasn't very good at it. I had no idea what I was doing. And to that agency owner or manager or leader who's listening now, if you feel like you're failing, guess what? It's okay. It's not like, I mean, as John was saying at the beginning of the podcast, it's not like any of us grow up in kindergarten saying, I want to be an insurance agent. Well, it's not like any of us, you know, are saying, hey, I want to be a leader. And we go through this proper leadership training that prepares us for the world that we're in. We got tossed into this because we're good at what we do. And now we need a team of people to help us do what we do on a bigger scale. And I just think another example of how you can help your team do what you do and communicate that why is in what I have a process that's called an employer review. I mentioned the 90-day employee review, that it's dumb to wait 90 days to tell somebody if they're doing something right or wrong. I think the 90-day performance review is a bad idea as a whole. So I switch it and I make it the employer review, where every 90 days I pursue people on my team and I give them the opportunity to tell me how I'm doing. I let them know they're heard. I let them know that they're cared for. I let them say things and I become not just a visionary leader, but a listenary leader, where I am listening. And I ask them tons of questions like, how do you feel about your job? How do you feel about the purpose that we're on? We're at Stewardship, our purpose is to love people through finances. I say, are we loving people through finances well? Where are we doing that well? Where could we be doing it better? Is there a part of your job that you really don't appreciate or like right now? Is there somebody on the team that you really like? Is there somebody on the team that you don't like? Is there a tool, a resource, or technology that is helping you? Is there a tool, resource, or technology that you wish you had? It's pursuing them and asking them these questions. And not only does that let them know what the purpose is and that lets them feel the purpose from the leader as you're serving them in that moment, but it gives them freedom to speak into you about the business. And now they can have the freedom to see this mission that you're on get lived out with some of their ideas and their creativity. And John, some of the best ideas I've ever gotten from my business have come from these employer reviews.
Yeah, all of the ideas for our business come from our teams. I'm definitely not the smartest guy on the train. I think the reason a lot of us don't do that, though, is we're afraid of the answers. We don't want to hear that we're not doing well. It's the same thing. When's the last time you've asked your customers, your insureds, for feedback on how was your journey? How could we improve it? And we need to go with our teams. How was your journey? How could we improve it? And whenever I've mentioned this to other teams or when I'm in a speaking engagement, I always get this pushback, and you can almost feel the tension in the air because a lot of people in business don't really want feedback. They want agreement. And we're afraid that we may not like the answers. Well, the thing is, if we don't like the answers, that's an opportunity for us to fix the problem.
Yeah, I would say some of the worst leaders out there are leaders who are making decisions or doing things so that they can hear the things they like to hear. They're making decisions or doing things so that they can be liked. The thing with leadership is it requires conflict, because otherwise there would be no leadership needed. That conflict helps people grow and get better. And that's what you're trying to lead towards, to continually grow and get better and serve your team better and serve your clients better. And that requires conflict. And I think if all of us just looked in the mirror and humbly said, I'm not perfect, I'm going to have conflict, but this conflict can be good, then you like hearing some of that negative feedback. Sure, do I get feedback from my team in those meetings that I'm just like, that's irrelevant, or this person's maybe in an unhealthy place mentally and shouldn't be saying that? And do I get frustration sometimes when I hear some of that feedback? Oh, yes. Yes, I do. But I have the humility, or at least I try to have the humility, to listen to all of it and then figure out, chew up the meat, spit out the bones, figure out, oh, wow, this is actually really good. This is a negative piece of feedback, and I need to make a change here. You know, this is legit. Without that, you're not going to have the conflict, and without that conflict, you're not going to grow. If we understand that growth comes from that conflict, not only would you be humble enough to receive conflicting information, but maybe, just maybe, you might get excited to hear it.
I think we need to develop a culture of openness, and I'm not sure how many agencies out there have that. I will tell you, when I first started in the insurance industry, I was, I was ignorant. I thought I knew a lot more than I really did. And I had a lot of mentors and a lot of staff members that would occasionally give me the proverbial smack in the head and say, hey, no, this is really what's going on. I remember having an underwriter tell me that, hey, you're writing your policies wrong and they aren't going to cover anything that you are telling your client that they're covering. And it took, it was a very humbling experience for me to approach that insured and say, hey, listen, I did not do this right. This is the way that we need to do it. If, you know, in order to protect your business and to protect you if anything happens. And that wasn't a pleasant conversation. But I'll tell you what, I had that customer is still with me to this day. Even after I sold my book of most of my book of business, he refused to move. I have a question for you. So you're running a mortgage company, investment managers. I'm assuming that is investment portfolios. Are you tying those with variable insurance products, or what is your?
I mean, from time to time, we are, but it's really an investment advisory where we help people with their retirement accounts, non-qualified retirement accounts, but just investing for the future. So yeah, it's an investment advisory.
So you're a mortgage broker. You're doing giving financial advice, and you're working on the insurance. How do those work together to better your insurance?
Well, I look at somebody's complete financial picture to say, okay, what can we do to help them? What can we do to serve them? That includes, yes, insurance. It includes investments and their home loans, but it's not going to stop with that. So we're likely going to open an opportunity to help people with their taxes. We just launched a real estate program. So our goal and our hope is to help them with all of their finances. So rather than looking at it as how does it tie to insurance, our thought is let's put ourselves in the customer's shoes and what problems, what issues, what confusions do they have with their finances as a whole, and how can we help them? So because of that lens, they all tie together really. And when you look at the primary pieces of a good financial plan, insurance is a huge part of that. So as a result, we're going to be giving people insurance advice as we're creating for them a financial plan to help them live out the life that they want to live.
So as you're engineering your customer journey, are you finding that sometimes offering so many products and so many things, you can kind of lose sight of the insurance true north? How do you keep things clear with so many product offerings that you're working with your insured? How do you maintain credibility on all the products that you're offering? And then how do you successfully communicate that as a package to your insureds, to your clients?
Yeah, because there's so many different insurance products out there, we have to first recognize and know that not everybody is going to purchase every insurance product in one moment. There are certain moments throughout their life that an insurance product might be a really great thing for them, and certain times where it might not be a good time. And then we also have to recognize that there are times where they absolutely need this, but they're not ready to hear it yet. As we mentioned before, they're in the process of buying the home, and they're not going to be ready for that or wanting that. One of the things that we do with our financial planning customers, our investment management customers, is on an ongoing basis, we provide for them kind of a living, breathing financial plan. And our financial planning framework has 12 elements. We call these 12 financial elements that let them know how they're doing with their finances. It helps answer four questions that are super important that most people are asking when they're asking questions to an investment advisor. Those are questions like, am I making the most of my income? Am I saving the right amount? Do I have the right mix of investments? And am I taking the right amount of risk? And these elements all include things about their insurance, including an insurance rate. We see if they have the right amount of liability coverage based on the total amount of income they have, or the income potential they have, or the type of assets that they have. And this rate, if it ever goes above or beyond a certain number, it can give us an alert that says we need to connect with that client and let them know, hey, your rate went below what we would consider a good number, or the below a number that you said was going to be a good number. And we communicate that to them. But at the same time, if any of the other financial elements are kind of out of whack and we can help fill those financial elements with an insurance product, then we're going to recommend that based on not only their risk level, but also their future income or asset needs. So it all ties together in a lot of different ways. From as simple as, hey, we helped them get a mortgage, they just need homeowners insurance so they can get their keys, all the way to and through we have people who are really trying to build wealth, really trying to protect their wealth, and making sure that their financial plan is as sound as possible.
So you look at it holistically. So you don't divide and conquer. I mean, maybe out through the customer journey part, you may divide and conquer based on need and acceptability. But as far as your team, you're looking at everything holistically.
Yes. So we have only insurance advisors, only mortgage advisors, only investment advisors. I don't have one person that does the mortgage, does the insurance, and does the investments. It's hard enough to stay on top of insurance. So imagine trying to stay on top of mortgage and insurance and investments. So we have pros in each area, and those people of the team work together with our client.
How do you internally process-wise, how do you communicate information back and forth between the functional entities in order to make sure that you're being holistic with your customer? And the reason I'm asking is, again, a finance company, I do insurance, I started a venture capital firm. And to me, they're completely separate segments. And I haven't even looked at to see how they would be able to benefit somebody in total. I am not looking at a holistic approach, but I'm smart enough to know that there has to be an opportunity there to do so. So how do you communicate with all those elements without going off course and by keeping your true north? I guess that would be a better question.
Well, it starts with that unified purpose and talking about it, permeating every decision that we make and pointing to that true north, that unified purpose of loving people through finances, but then specifically communicating to each employee what loving people through finances looks like in their role. Everybody on our team has what's called a queen bee role. This is the thing that they must do. And if they don't do it, then the hive dies. So it's something that they focus on. But then that queen bee role isn't enough. They all have three things that they have to make sure they are absolutely doing every single week in order to make their queen bee role come to life. And those three things and their queen bee role all point to our purpose of loving people through finances. So as they're enacting in those three things that they focus on every week, as they're acting out in their queen bee role, they're going to come across clients' needs based on the way that we've put those things together, which means they're going to talk with other people on the team about helping get those needs met and filled, whether that's going across the hall and going into somebody's office and talking about it in person, or connecting on our internal chat system, or connecting on email with our team. But a lot of it is stored in our CRM, and we have custom fields within our CRM. And if we ever decide that one of those fields is falling in one direction or another, or if one of those fields isn't filled in or just gets filled in, we can create automation and triggers for our own internal employee journey based on how the data is being input or not input throughout a customer's life cycle.
So your team members focus in on the whole picture, but of the needs of the insured, but then focus in on their part of that picture. So if I'm in insurance and I'm working on there and I realize, there's probably an opportunity and need here for some wealth management, they will take that over and send it over to your professional that does the wealth management.
Yep, 100%. And that insurance person doesn't get additional compensation or referral fee or anything. They just do it because they care about the customer, and they do it because we celebrate that. What gets celebrated gets repeated, and in our meetings and when we're doing our big, hoorah things in every year in our annual event, or whether it's in one of our smaller monthly meetings, or whether it's just in our weekly teams chats, we're celebrating those opportunities. We're celebrating when people are loving customers better through finances by referring each other to somebody else when there's a genuine need. So because it gets celebrated so much, it's definitely a part of it.
I really think that is a good way to structure the culture. From the insurance point, a lot of our agencies out there, we're trying to live paycheck to paycheck. We're trying to book that policy, whatever it takes, in order to pay our office space rent. And I sometimes think that we get in this short-sighted role where we're looking at buying the policy, pay the bill, buy the policy, pay the bill. Mm-hmm. When we're stepping over a dollar to save a dime, that if we were to just look at our insurers at the whole picture of what is their total need, Just imagine how that would help our company fulfill those needs and grow our businesses.
John, you know what it takes to make a really good customer journey and to do all the things that you're talking about? Genuinely putting yourself in somebody else's shoes. I mean, that's it. And when was the last time we as agency owners shopped for insurance by, you know, through one of our competitors, or shopped through insurance for insurance through our own agency, and put ourselves in the shoes of the customer and thought, what's really great here, or what's not really great here, or what are my pain points, what are my issues, what am I having? I mean, when was the last time we talked, like you said, with our insureds and asked them these questions? What do we do well? What do we not do well? What are you most scared of? What do you have the most peace about? Genuinely putting yourself into somebody's shoes and doing it on a consistent basis will make your agency go to the next level, make you go further, and get you there faster. Yet it's not something that we're intentionally doing on a consistent basis.
Grant, thank you for all the information that you've helped us. Can you give us a little bit of information on how our agents can get a hold of you and get a hold of a copy of your book?
Yeah, I am very active on social media. So on Instagram, I am at Grant Botma, GRANTBOTMA, and at Twitter, the same place. You can find me on Facebook. I'm posting about stuff all the time, whether it's about my business, and you can kind of see what I'm doing and copy and paste what I'm posting for your business, or I'm posting about leadership and parenting and all those things. I'm pretty active in my DMs, so if you send me a message on social media, I'll likely get back to you. You can purchase The Problem Isn't Their Paycheck or Work-Life Harmony, my recent book, on Amazon. You can just search my name, Grant Botma, on Amazon, and it's on all the things, whether it's a paperback, hardcover, or even Audible.
That's something I wish we would have had time to go over, is the work-life balance, because I've yet to know an insurance person that has that teeter-totter exactly balanced. You know, depending on the day, we're either falling on our butt on the left or falling on the butt on the right side of the teeter-totter. So that's a discussion for another podcast.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I would absolutely love to come on the podcast again. It was a ton of fun, and I'll give you a teaser. The best way to have work-life balance is to stop aiming for balance, because as you mentioned, you will fall out of balance. So the whole idea of the book and the whole idea of what my wife and I have done over the last 15 years is we have balance, but it's not our goal. It's not our aim. We have a different goal, and it's changed the way that we do things, so much so that I get to take a month off in September and a month off in March, and it is huge for me and my family, and believe it or not, it's huge for my business. So I'll share some of that the next time we talk.
That's it for this edition of the Insurance Huddle. We'll see you next time. In the meantime, be sure to check out our Facebook page and Medium blog, linked in the description box down below, for more great resources. This podcast has been brought to you by CoverWallet for Agents, the easiest way for insurance agents to quote, bind, and service their small business clients. All online and in minutes. Check us out at coverwalletforagents.com.